You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to audiochat.fakeologist.com. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow fakeologists around the globe. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. To listen to the live stream, go to s3.fakeologist.com. Now, on with the audio chat.
Hey, okay. All right. Okay, Gio, you're there, right?
Yes, I am here.
Okay, and Ab, you're here?
Yeah. I'm here, present, all accounted for. Do you want to do the introduction?
Oh, sure. Yeah, what's today's date? August 20th? This is O'Hallahan and Gio and Ab's PC Tech Chat.
Why not?
Yeah. Before I get into this, I just wanted to end that conversation we were having in the other channel about David Duke and AJ, how important I thought that discussion was. So Gio, you liked it, huh?
Yeah, I liked it. I think a lot of the Alex Jones listeners really got a red pill for the whole interview.
Yeah. I thought it made Jones relevant. I haven't been listening to Alex Jones, and not because of some kind of love-hate thing, only because I just thought that other speakers were more direct. You know, Alex has got a flair for showmanship, and it's not that I don't appreciate showmanship. It's just that sometimes, actually most of the time, I just want to get to the meat of the issue. You know, Alex does a lot of comedy
filler
routines. Yeah, he'll do a lot of comedy routines.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
He'll tease an item for five breaks. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. And
terrible.
Yeah, and he does a lot of commercialism too. I understand that he's got to get paid. I understand that. You know, it's just that I'm not into the whole gold and silver and, you know, the whole culture of, bugging out, waiting for the economy to collapse and buying guns and all that stuff. I don't know. And it's actually, I'm going to blame that whole thing on Aberrato, actually.
Well, once you get used to podcasts, it's hard to listen to commercial radio, isn't it?
Yeah. You've taught me too well, is that, a lot of this stuff is fake.
Anyway.
I mean, time has proved you to be correct, many times Jones has been, talking about, here comes the FEMA camps, here comes the collapse, here comes the, hey, Unreal.
Hello.
Hi, Unreal.
Yeah.
Hi.
And it,
bonjour.
Yeah.
Bonjour. Hello.
Sorry.
Yeah, and it never happens, so I don't know.
It's about to happen, though.
Yeah, I'm a fakeologist fan, so.
I have one last umph until the markets go down, and that is the Shemitah happening in September, supposedly. And after that, I am going to be backing out of that whole area. But I think the markets are going crazy all summer, even in China.
Yeah.
So it's really, I mean, they do say about a 7-year market trend, and we are in the 7th year after 08, 07.
Yeah.
Is that right? Is it time to buy oil? Are we making a stock recommendation now? Time to buy?
Oil is really low. It's actually almost hitting below $40 today.
Yeah.
And you can buy the dip.
Buy.
Yeah, I guess. But buying the dip, it might fall out. I don't know.
But it might go up.
Yeah, I don't know. I refuse to gamble. I understand buying silver for wealth preservation reasons. That makes sense to me. But actually buying land is actually a better idea than buying silver. because you can grow food on land. You know, you cannot eat silver. You know?
It's always better to buy land, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this whole Max Kaiser years ago said the words casino gulag.
I love that guy.
And I am in total agreement with that. Is that, you know, we start talking about silver and gold and oil futures and all that stuff. You know, we're talking about what Max Kaiser deemed the casino gulag, and I don't want to be in a gulag. So, who did we lose? Did we lose Unreal?
Yeah.
Oh, there he is. Okay. Yeah, so, I don't know, but that, Unreal's having issues.
Sure, looks like it.
Yeah, it looks like Unreal's having PC issues. I don't know. I thought that debate between Alex Jones and David Duke was very important. I know that Ab doesn't buy the Jewish angle, but I'm very much into hey Unreal.
Hey, I just had a problem.
Yeah, it's no problem. I'm very much into and have been for a long time. I've been aware of the Jewish supremacism that goes on in this world, and I thought that debate between Jones and Duke was extremely important. And I think that Duke not only made his case, but I think that he probably solicited a lot of new listeners from that. So.
Oh yeah, you woke up a lot of people about it. The one thing that I was giggling to myself is when he brought up the transatlantic slave trade being controlled by the Jewish elites and global slavery for the most part for 4,000 years. But anyways, when he brought that up, I was just like, this guy's going all out. I love it.
Yeah. The truth hurts, you know. Unfortunately. If we cannot not identify the problem, then we cannot solve it. I don't have any problem with, the dude around the corner that goes to temple every Saturday, the facts are the facts is that, slavery was a Jewish issue, not a white guy issue, a lot of these movements that are destroying Western culture are Jewish movements. The people that are in control of the money system, Jews. The people that are in control of the media, Jews.
Hold on a sec. Whoa. This isn't mammy shit here. But the people that appear to be in charge like that. How many times do I have to say it, that the people that appear to be put in charge, why would you put yourself in charge and get the blame? This is the oldest con in the book, guys. Come on.
Well, who controls, who's behind
how can
George
you be
Soros?
So sure?
Who's behind George Soros? It's just him. It's his business. It's his funding of government movements.
Well, yeah, I mean, Ab, I got to tell you that I am definitely sensitive to your argument. I mean, your
don't
argument
be so
is
sure. Why would what? Yeah. Well, sorry to interrupt, but it really gets me going, right? And I don't want to be. I don't want this channel to be the Jew bashing channel, just like I don't want it to be the Pope bashing channel. Let's be more realistic here when it comes to what's put before you. Why you always follow where the magician points his finger? You know, seriously.
I don't know. I mean, your ultimate point, Ab, is, in my opinion, correct. And what you're saying is you're pointing your finger at me and saying, oh, Hallahan, do you know? And the answer is no, I don't.
No.
And, and you are right. You know, I suspect, and I have to stop, right there, I have to, acquiesce to my friend Ab, when he says, do you know? And, the answer is no, I don't. I mean, I think that David Duke knows.
I doubt it. David Duke is an agitator to get you looking the wrong way. I'm positive of that. I'm pretty sure of that.
I don't know. It's,
he's in the media. He's promoted.
You have to be
in the media, so you're not a, like you're not, so you don't get beaded down by it. You have to, you know, pretend that you're in the media because then everyone thinks that you're, you know, accepted. It's it's more of like a double hand.
Abby's not promoted by the media; he's demonized by the media. There's a distinction there.
Yeah, exactly, and you get the same attention, don't you?
Okay. All right. Check.
Well, you might laugh about it, but I just don't want you to be so sure. Again, if you're positive that it's the Jews that run the world just because they say so, just because they're out there, then you better work on the final solution again.
Now this is a misunderstanding, Ab. The final solution was not to murder Jews. The final solution was to move them out of Germany. You know, and that's a misunderstanding.
It was one hell of a misunderstanding for the entire world. Even if I agree with you.
Well, I don't know. I would say that was a Jewish demonization of Hitler.
Denazification.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that Hitler was a good guy. I don't know Adolf Hitler. You know, like I don't speak German. I can't read German. You know, and I don't know that guy. The only thing that I know about Adolf Hitler was that he served his country to the best of his ability, and then when he finally got in control of
Germany... How can you say that, O'Hallahan? I mean, he got his country into a war they lost, and it has never been as many German deaths as after Hitler. I don't think he served his country.
But there's never been technology at that height either. World War I was also the latest, like, big war that no one's ever seen.
Yes, but I think I mentioned this before. If you take Germany as the name, it was before the Great Prussia. If you separate the word in two, you get Germany. And guerre in French means war. And many wars is the meaning of the name of the country that was invented in the late 19th century. So I think Germany was set up for these wars, and Hitler was one of the proponents to have that happen. And he did not serve his country well by having so many Germans killed. So whatever propaganda they are spewing out today about how a great man he was just a front figure as other politicians, and his whole role was to be the public front of a much bigger movement.
I think you have to realize where Germany was when Hitler did take over, because the Bolshevik Jewish revolution was influencing and controlling post-World War I Germany, which made Berlin Sin City. It became a very sinful place where transgenderism flourished. Pornography was created in Germany because the video camera was first created, and it was mayhem. If you look at the inflation of the currency, it was mind-boggling. But when Hitler took power, I mean, obviously he didn't do it in like the most efficient way, but he created a better society for the people and took them out of plunder.
Just like JFK did. It's the same thing. It's like they put up these front figures. They have a certain role. Hitler had a role to be the savior for Germany that led them into destruction. You can give him a lot of credits for many things that he supposedly did, but I think it was a much bigger plan, and it was necessary for the big plan that Germany armed itself, that it got wealthy again to be able to support another war. So I think in hindsight, nothing is very true about Hitler. Most of the stories, they are contrived. And I think it's conspiracy research that actually tries to have him as a hero now with the new documentaries and all this pro-white movement. So I think you need to see a little bit further than just as a man can do all this by himself. He doesn't, and he wasn't financed by himself either. He was financed by the same people that have financed Russia in the same period.
Well, Charles Giuliani would completely agree with you. I you know, I listen to Deanna Spingola, Michael Collins Piper, who just recently passed away, and Charles Giuliani, and they disagree, you know. And so you've got scholars that are intensely researching these particular topics. All of them are disagreeing, you know. And then you read, or you don't, I didn't read it, but I watched the documentary Hellstorm of the, of, you know, of what happened in Dresden. And, I'm confused. I mean, you know, the bottom line is that I don't...
It looks like the same thing that happened in Japan with the bomb, you know. So it was the firebombing. So it was not something that was unique for Germany. I mean, they did these kind of things all over when they could.
Yeah. I don't know. Long ago, when I was young, when I was Gio's age, I had all of these definite opinions, right? And all of them were wrong, you know? And so now that I've grown older and I've matured, I've stepped back from saying, you know, this is right. Cause the thing is that I don't know, you know, like I can't read German.
But what we know is like every politician is put before us and he's financed by big money. So it's inconceivable that Hitler was a genuine guy, arisen from the masses, a poor guy in Munich, looking for a work in art and just a war hero with many merits. And then, it's all scripted. Just like JFK,
well, I agree
they
with you, especially since we know now how scripted they are today. Why do we think he was any different?
You know, I think.
Do you think the plan changed?
I think the thing is that throughout, like, since World War II until since YouTube, since people were able to disintegrate information more easily, obviously with the internet, is that most of these scholarly works are, you know, they're not telling us the whole story. And I think it's a backlash against that, against the contrived, denazification of Germany. You know, the United States and the West haven't been condemned to the crimes since they won the war. And it's just coming to light now. And I think that's what people are trying to rationalize.
What do you think about the murder of Lincoln? That was long before this, and it was probably just as real as the killing of JFK. It's like inconceivable to think that these people are at it just since after the Second World War. They were at it before, and they're at it now, and they will be at it in the future.
See, I can't disagree with that. I can't disagree, but I don't know what is true and what is not, and...
Yeah, well,
they're building up this idol for everybody to see. They did it in Germany before the war. Now they think the time is ripe again to build him up once again. But the fact is, he's just a political figure that was used, and he was financed, and he was put there.
Well, you can say there is a possibility of an organic growth of that magnitude. I mean, obviously, without
what proof do we have of that?
I'm just saying, there, in theory, that it can happen. But I mean, obviously,
that's wishful thinking.
Well, I mean, just it's a possibility.
Not really. I mean, if we look at all the different political structures we have had since a very long time, what has been genuine? Nothing. It's the same people. I mean, Freemasons wrote the American Declaration of Independence. Freemason was behind the French Revolution, all contrived.
Interesting. That's an interesting thought. That's an opinion I agree with. This is something that, Eric Dubé is constantly banging the drum on, is that NASA.
Eric Dubé is completely out of line when it comes to 9/11 and Germany and everything. I mean, he's I don't know.
I agree with that on real. There's something so contrived about that guy. We all wish he was real, just like we would all probably wish Hitler was real or Obama was real. But there's so much evidence in my mind to indicate that there's something behind these facades. And there's just no doubt now with all
Eric
the nonsense
Dubé.
That goes on. But yeah, I had an email debate. Be careful.
Yeah, I had an email debate with Miles Mathis about this. I was emailing him back and forth, and he was You know, he was saying that there was something wrong with Eric Dubé, and I'm like, you know, I mean, Eric Dubé is just like me. He's just an ESL teacher in Thailand. You know, I mean, just nothing.
Well, that's what he set up to be. You don't know the guy. Hey, I wanted to ask you something. Did you ever hear, Hallahan, did you ever hear of Jan Erik on my past podcast?
You brought his name up the other day, I think, or somebody did.
Very good guy. Very good guy. Anyway, he can really give you a good indicator of the powers that be and how the Jews are the court Jews. And he's got a great perspective to talk about. Yeah. But I think Unreal knows about him.
He's the author of that book you've been touting lately, right? The JFK book? Is it the author of that book?
Well, that would be Blue and Moon.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, so, Unreal, you can speak about Eric, right? A fellow Norwegian.
Well, I can speak of him. He's a very good researcher, and he's been on many times on Fakeologist, and also for a long period with Chris on Hoaxbusters. And he has researched the origins, more or less, of the banking system that he has going back to Venice and further back. And for him, it's very clear that this is a family business, and they may take on the identity of Jewish people or Christians or whatever, but they are more families than they are any specific religion or people. I mean, when we come to the Jewish question, we must not forget that this is a very difficult subject, because it's not a religion per se. It's not a people either per se. So it's a kind of a fake identity. They're not Semites either. So it's like it's very difficult to pinpoint something to a people that's not really a people, and I think it's more like a kind
an idea.
Of identification to probably know that they're in the loop of some things. But don't forget either that most of the Jews are not wealthy and running banks. I mean, it's a small minority of the those that claim themselves Jews to be in that position. So I think it's goes deeper than just the surface appellation of being Jewish or whatever. I think it's more related to even a more distant past, and they all are linked together somehow across the countries.
I just want to ask if this is true. Going back to the Medici family in Venice, they say like during that period, Christians weren't allowed to practice usury, and that Judaism allowed them to use to practice usury, so that the Christian lords went through Jewish people who were willing to have usury laws to charge customers, you know, interest.
Yep.
It's like a religious workaround.
Yes, so that is something I have heard also. So that might be the case. If you think about it, it's very convenient to escape from the very strict laws of usury in some way or another. So were they Africans or Jews or whatever, it was always a good thing to get out of the Christian principles of not accepting usury. So who was were behind those money being lent out? Who knows? They could have been front figures too for more powerful families. And in Venice, they have the Fondo, where families built up huge fortunes that they used to finance the different political movements and wars. And they were not per se of Christian or Jewish inheritance per se in the beginning, as far as I know.
Where's Deanna Spingolo when you need her? She's like a cop. She's never
around.
Probably
looking at Hellstorm.
Yeah.
You know, they took down Hellstorm.
Did they really?
on YouTube, supposedly. I was hearing it from – I listened to The Daily Show, which is like – you guys wouldn't like it. I mean, it's just a funny Daily Show kind of esque, but like they really do go after the Jewish problem, I guess you would say. But they said that they took it down off YouTube, off Kyle Hunt's YouTube channel.
Good grief. Well, thank God I saved that thing. I've got it on a hard drive. So, guys, this has got to be about the craziest tech podcast I've ever heard.
It's YouTube. It's a private service. Well, I don't know why everyone thinks YouTube is the be-all and end-all.
Yeah. I don't know. So, guys, you want to get into tech?
I'd love to.
Switch topics into tech? Unreal? Is it okay to switch the topic, or do you want to flesh out Judaism?
That's where you started with.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about Judaism. We can leave that to David Duke and Spingola. They've got it all figured out.
Yeah,
someone just said we did 9/11. They'd probably buy that too if it was conformed to their worldview.
I think
I know there was an article saying the Jews we control Hollywood. I remember that one, and they highlight that article like it was written in gold. So if the Jews came out and said we did 9/11, that would be proof, all the proof they needed.
But how long was it, to me, it's
just too obvious.
Yeah, but how long did they control Hollywood until that paper came out, that article, you know?
Yeah,
I don't want to talk about it much more.
Yeah. You know, the problem is that when we get into that is that to really, to really hash that topic out, we're really going to have to set aside time and do research. And that the problem is that we haven't done it yet, so we're just kind of speculating. I don't know. It's of dubious value when we speculate.
Yeah, we'll leave it to Giuliani and Spingola. They got it all covered. David Duke. They got their own shows. That's all they talk about.
Yeah, well, that's true.
I can understand O'Hallahan. I can understand O'Hallahan. You come when you listen to that all the time, then it's going to be in your mind. I get it.
I understand it. Yeah. So.
But what is true, though, is the fact that Hollywood is a war machine, and they are using it as much as they can, and they have always done so. And it started in much of the movies started in Germany, so it's a powerful tool to manipulate us. But I don't buy too much into the labels they want to put on the people in the top positions. I think it's more the fact that other Jews are as much oppressed by the so-called Jews in those positions as we are. So it's like it's a bit bad to direct anger towards a whole contingent of people. Whereas I think it's only the top people that are part of something else, and that something else. It's very hard to pinpoint, and I think it's all the research we do, we will always stumble upon the documents they have fabricated for us to stumble upon.
But wouldn't it be the same logic just to say the Muslims are all they do is blow up people for the 72 virgins? Because it's in the news, and they even say that we want to kill the Jews. The Muslims are always the evil ones. Isn't it the same logic?
I don't guess.
I think it's because we're realizing who's funding them. Like, there's no way they can get that kind of money without Western backing. So,
you know, it's very difficult to find truth within the languaging that we use, and this is something that I have found to be tedious. Is that you know, when we say things like Jews and Christians and Catholics and Muslims, you know, we're talking about basically all the same goddamn thing. It's all sun worship. You know, we keep defining our terms using these words, you know, and these words are completely contrived. You know, if you think about it, it's, you know, all of these, it's something that I tell my wife, is that Christianity is really just Judaism. You know, the prophet Muhammad, you know, just, he took the Quran is really just, you know, stories that came from the Jewish Talmud, you know. And it's something that I tell my wife too, is that I can prove that Luke Skywalker and Yoda and all these guys exist. You know, all we have to do is go to a primitive culture with a television and pop in Star Wars and see there's Luke and there's Yoda and there's Chewbacca. You know what I mean?
And I'm always surprised of how we can escape to see that anything that is written about some gods in a book is obviously contrived by man, and it's only a tool to rule the minds of man. And if you look at the word religion, it's religare, it's to bind the mind. So I'm really against all those people that says everybody's free to believe and everybody can choose their religion. I don't think so. I think religion is real brainwashing, and I don't think anybody should be free to just believe whatever somebody writes in a book or whatever. It needs to be something to know, and that's what I think we should try to do, to try to know as much as we can at our level. And when it comes to history, it's very hard, and I think it would be interesting to see how development is going towards the revision of history in general, in the sense that I really liked the last video from Jermaine or on the Stonehenge fake. And I think once we start to discover that the Stonehenge is only a contraption too, and that maybe the pyramids in Egypt are probably made not so long ago either, then we will start to understand
that. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Oh, I saw that video too that Jernism made, and I thought that was brilliant. You know, but,
the pyramids aren't so ancient. That's a great idea. Yeah. I never thought of that.
It is a French researcher that is doing geopolymers, and he have more or less proved that the stones in the pyramid, they have been made by geopolymer, means that they have been poured in place. And what's there is sandstones that just look like sandstones, but they have been poured in place because the humidity of the stones does not correspond to real stones.
I like that, poured in place. That makes so much more sense. That's amazing.
I tell you, after my rap the other day on, you know, I had said, I have no idea where the pyramids came from.
What's interesting is the fact that if the pyramids were poured in place, that means that they were using geopolymers from that time on, which was probably before they did Stonehenge. And what we see in Stonehenge is also probably geopolymers. So they have been using geopolymers to make what appears to be real stone for a long time, and they had known it. And they have been using it. And I think that's something of what has been touched on, with the fact that we can see this steel structure that they poured the geopolymers onto in Stonehenge. And that's well worth more investigation, of course. Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's okay. Babette, it just so happens when I woke up at like 3 o'clock in the morning this morning, and Babette had written me on Skype this whole big thing about exactly what you just said, that her take on it was that the pyramid blocks had actually been poured in place, and she showed me scientists that the archaeologist you were talking about. So that's a funny thing.
Yeah, he's not an archaeologist. He's a scientist, and he has an institution close to Paris called the Geopolymer Institute, and they recreate stone all the time. And it's a known procedure now, but it's not as much use as it should be. But he recreated the exact stones they used in Egypt.
Are you telling me they can make stone? They can make granite?
I guess so. I don't know about granite, but I know they can make softer stones for sure. Yes.
Wow.
Very interesting. Yeah.
Hi, guys. It's Anne Spinwall here.
Hey, Annette.
Hello, Annette.
Hi, Annette.
Hey, Annette. Hi.
Yeah. So, guys, you want to get it rolling with Tech Chat, or Annette? Did you want to talk about something specific?
No, I'm late getting here,
and I see.
Just wanted to say hi and see what's going on.
We were going to do a tech podcast, but for the past 30 minutes, we've been riffing on Hitler and the Jews.
Oh, Alex Jones, I'm sorry. I missed that.
Yeah, Alex Jones had his big debate with David Duke, and it was brilliant. And yeah, anyway.
Did anybody listen to the Ball Earth Skeptic Roundtable number 11?
It's on my desktop. I haven't listened to it yet. How was it?
Yeah, I've only listened to about an hour so far, and I listened to the end live yesterday. So it didn't go too well, I don't think.
No.
Is the David Duke Alex Jones thing available on Alex's website?
It's on Mammy's.
Go to Mammy's. No commercials.
Yeah, grab it on Mammy's.
I've never heard of that. What is that?
Oh, I'm linking it. Hold on. I'm just getting from my PC again. Go to Mammy's.
By the way, if I forget to put links in the show notes, you guys can log in to fakeologist.com and put them in the comment section as well, just so you know.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I had some thoughts on the Bull Earth debate from yesterday, I think it didn't go very well, as it always does when it's a debate about the spherical Earth, and I think one of the reasons is that they actually are much more prone to use discredit by they're using fallacious arguments and most importantly appeal to the ridicule, and in the whole debate they tried to laugh and tried to say how ridiculous the flat earth theory was, and that was actually a kind of a message in itself. It means like they don't have so much to say about the shape of the Earth as it is supposed to be, as they have to debunk the other theories. So it's a kind of an admission in some ways to the fact that we really need to go deeper into the subject and have more tangible proofs to put on the table. Because on the Ball Earth side, they don't have that much tangible proofs.
Yeah, that's what I found so fascinating about concave Earth 2 years ago, is that it wasn't the fact that the Earth was concave or not. It was the fact that you could not prove that it was a ball. everyone still seems to be, excuse me, stuck on that same point, is that for as much science and satellites and you know, rockets to the moon that we supposedly have, we cannot prove that the Earth is a ball, right? And NASA is suspiciously silent on that.
But it's not even that they're silent. They're actually yelling right now with this moon passing across the Earth. It's insane. They're yelling at us.
Yeah. The cookie.
Oh, I agree. They're in overdrive, GeoFree. They're in overdrive.
Yeah, it's hilarious. I love it.
Yeah. You know, and
just
they
think
were,
about it, it's well, like with all the measurement tools that the powers at B have, they still go back to 18 something to try to use that experiment at the time to prove the shape of the Earth. I mean, it's completely incredible. I mean, they should be able to give us so many measurement proofs of the curvature that it's inconceivable for us to be here discussing, you know, experiments from the 1800s.
Yeah.
And have you ever seen the slide that says, like, this is a brain cell and this is the universe? They look exactly the same.
Yeah, it is a brain cell. Both pictures.
yeah.
That's so funny. I just happened to see that yesterday, actually, Gio. That's so funny.
Have you guys realized, have you guys noticed, like, you know, the new spandex yoga pants? Now these younger people, they're wearing all this space stuff. It's like galaxies on their pants and stuff, and the colors. It's like hypnotizing. So it's really weird what's happening in the culture right now with just space itself.
It's funny. I'm not aware because I'm in Korea. I'm completely unaware of American culture. It's funny.
Yeah, but
speaking of space, my sister doesn't listen to any of the stuff. She doesn't believe anything that I've learned, and I'm going to try to see if I can find a phone number and call one of these Challenger astronauts. I was talking to Ab about it yesterday. But anyway, I thought I would call her and see if she would, if I could make sure that the conference call thing worked like it was supposed to. I was going to have her call. I mean, call her first and then let Ab let me know if it was okay. So anyway, I told her, I said,
okay, good idea.
I said, you're not going to believe. I said, the Challenger accident was
fake.
Was a hoax. Yeah. Oh my God. She just went off on me. And she goes, how stupid do you think I am? I'm not going to believe that in a million years. And I said, well, will you at least look at the pictures and read the article? Yeah, I'll do that. And she hung the phone up on me. So it's just so frustrating.
Oh, man. We have to write a script of questions for Annette, you know, when she gets the Challenger pilot on the phone.
No, I agree.
Like, you know, like the first question could be, you know, what does it feel like to go nose down into the water when you're in a shuttle? you know, was the water really cold when you were swimming out of the
Hey, Annette, don't forget, pretend you just joined a new religion. It's really the same idea. You wouldn't necessarily talk to your sister saying, hey, I just found this new religion. You should join right away. So, same concept.
That's a good point. In fact, I almost wanted to tell her that, you know, I'm out there on chat and send her the link and say, you want to listen to me talking to my, to, you know, talking on this new. That's a good idea. It's my new religion.
That's so funny.
You may as well just hand her a Bible and say, hey, I believe this now, and say she's not a believer. Why would she read it? Someone handed me a Bible, I'd say I'll put it on the bookshelf and read it next week and never read it. You got to really, you got to see where these people think you are in terms of your...
Well, you know, the Challenger disaster was, you know, in her lifetime, and probably one of her earliest memories of a... Well, she's only 6 years younger than I am, so anyway. But I know it had a huge impact on her. And, I mean, it's nice to know that they're not dead, but it's also pisses me off, you know? I hope they enjoyed the money.
Yeah.
And that leads me to believe that there were never any real astronauts. All this rigorous training and crap. None of that ever happened, I guess.
And who coined the phrase actor-nauts? Somebody coined that phrase, actor-nauts.
That's good.
Well, there's one. I like one ass, true, not true.
We could start a religion called fakeology, and Ab, you've got to get a picture of yourself strapped to a cross, gazing to the heavens, with the subtitle, subtitle fakeologist, the final word.
You'll have to get another. I won't get myself.
That's funny.
O'Hallahan, did you get that website for me?
Yeah, it's linked. Go down to the live chat, and it's linked. It's grism.blogspot. Let me know if you have trouble finding that. Just go down to the live stream tab, and the link will be right there. Do you see it, Annette?
I'm in the little box. Let me look.
Okay, down at the bottom of the TeamSpeak window, there are two tabs. One of them is Fakeologist audio chat, and the other one is live stream. And that's the one that we're in. And highlight that link, and just above that, you'll see grism.blogspot.
Oh, or just Google Mammy Shit, and there won't be any other sites that come up.
I don't want to use vulgarity. Annette
okay,
McNannell.
I found it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, why do they do that name? It's banned out.
Well, there's good and bad to that name. You know, I mean, first of all, when you say mammy shit, you'll never forget it. You know, you can also, you know, you know, with a name like that, you know that they'll never be mainstream. So they'll always be real. So with a name like that, guys, on to tech chat. Do you guys want to hash out other topics?
I'm okay with that. That was your idea, so you can do that.
Okay. Let's see. Yeah. So the other day I had this idea, and the reason I had this idea about a tech podcast was because of my friend Babette, and she really loved my talk about Linux, and she really liked the whole idea of having her computer be, you know, not Microsoft, right? And so, you know, she was, you know, enthusiastic about it. And I was thinking, okay, you know, I'm going to help her. And then, after trying to help her a little bit, I realized that, for as smart as she was, and I mean, you know, Babette is extremely intelligent. I mean, this woman speaks three languages. She's an activist. She's articulate. She's educated. But for as smart as she is, she has no computer technology. She has no computer technology vocabulary. And, so just like trying to get her to do simple things, like I tried, she wanted to add French accents to, you know, to her texting, you know, 'cause she speaks French. And, you know, it's just as simple as, you know, going to the bottom panel and right clicking on the bottom panel and then going to, you know, the applications window opens and then you just go to languages and then you just download the language packs. It's very, very simple. And I could not get her to find the panel, you know, and I realized at that point that, you know, I'm so into technology and software and that I have developed a vocabulary that maybe the average person doesn't have. And so I thought that if we got together, that we could, you know, we could bring, you know, like a vocabulary to the people that wanted to listen to it, you know, the people that my thinking is this, is that we have monolithic corporations like, Microsoft and Apple, that spoon feed us this technology. And I said this yesterday to Gio, that he really agreed with, and I wanted everyone to understand this simple concept that a computer is not a television, right? No one is sitting in jail because of their television, right? There's plenty of people in jail because of their computers and what they've done in their computers, but people think that their computer is a television, and it's not, right? If you don't understand just the basics of the technology, you know, you could potentially get hurt. And so that's, you know, that's kind of, I wanted to get Gio and Unreal into the channel and just kind of mull over these concepts. And the first thing that I wanted to talk about is why. You know, why do you want to build your own computer and why do you want to install your own operating system, no matter what operating system that is? Why do you want to do it yourself, right? And I have an answer to that, and I wanted to hear Gio and Unreal's answer to those questions. My answer to that question is simply this, is that if you don't understand your computer technology, someone else is going to give you their answers, and it's usually an agenda. Well, here, you know, you solve your problem by buying, you know, this program. And this program costs $100, right? If, let's say, for example, you're using a Linux operating system, there's probably an application just like that for free, right? For instance, Audacity, right? I do my podcasts in the Linux operating system. And if you have a Windows operating system, you know, the first thing you're going to start doing is you're going to Google how to do a podcast how to do a podcast in the Windows operating system, and you're going to be prompted to buy a program right? But if you have the if you have the Linux operating system, it's as simple as just going to your software manager and downloading Audacity, which is a free program. So I've done all of my podcasts without spending a nickel, and this is just one aspect of millions. When you understand your technology, the benefits you can reap from it. And another big benefit that Geo is really going to take off on is privacy. So what do you think? What do you think about what I just said?
I like it. I mean, I think people should be able to be in control, or at least know of the knowledge of the inner workings of anything you work with day to day. I mean, to build a computer is really a very novice process. If you just take it one step at a time, you also save a lot of money. And, if something breaks, you can figure out, how to exchange that and make it work again,
Yeah, totally agree with that. Yeah. What do you think, Unreal?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing to be more at ease with the technologies that surround us, and the computer is a big part of that. So
yeah.
I think for most people, there are not that many professional programs that they would need, and I think, as you said, there will mostly be alternatives in the Linux world that would satisfy that usage.
Hmm. Yeah. Handling your operating system does not take a lot of brain power, and I think that's where older people, I'm not saying that we're old, like middle-aged people, they get frustrated. And that was happening to Babette, was she was getting frustrated with something that was actually very, very simple, And, I started to actually feel sorry for you, like the guys on the Windows helplines, oh my God, this, when you say right click, the person goes, what do you mean? What's right click? And so you have to explain to them, you have two mouse buttons, one on the left side and one on the right side, the first thing that I wanted to tell people was exactly what Geo just said, is that building your own computer is probably about, a couple steps more difficult than tying your shoes. I mean, if you can bolt two pieces of wood together, you can build a computer. It's just not that it's not that complex, I have taught probably about three or four people over Skype how to build a computer. And I've told them the same thing, you're going to be surprised at how easy it was to build a computer once you build it. And when I initially talk to them about building their own computers, they freak out, oh my God, I can't do that. I can't handle it. And once they're finished with it, they wind up saying, oh, you were right. Not only was it not difficult, but it was a lot of fun, but the benefits are exactly what Geo just said, is that, once you build it, you can unbuild it and you can fix it when it breaks, right? You don't have to go running to the Geek Squad every time there's a little noise inside your PC. I remember one of the first PCs that I built years ago, all of a sudden started making a clicking sound. And my friend, who was a complete, computer novice, said, he pointed at me and he says, that's why you go to Dell and you buy a Dell computer, and I said, wait, his name was Mike. And I said, Mike, don't panic. Right. I opened up the side casing, and, it was the back fan. There was one of the wires that was attached to the back fan was just a little bit in the way of the fan. It took me a half a second to just push the wire, back into place, and the sound was gone. So people panic over these little things, when actually there's nothing at all to panic about, there's almost no way to break your computer unless you physically abuse it. You know, even if you were to, you know, to install a Linux operating system on an existing PC and for some reason you hated it, you could easily just reinstall the Windows operating system. It's not a big deal, you know, and you could go back and forth over and over again and keep, you know, wiping and I've done it. You know, I've wiped and reinstalled and wiped and reinstalled. I've there was a week where I tried, you know, five different flavors of Linux. I wiped my drive five times and reinstalled operating systems six times. You know, it doesn't make any difference. You know, it's not that difficult.
One of the key things would be to have a external drive though, to have some of the, possible programs or files needed or any personal information you just will want to keep forever. You got to keep that in a separate hard drive. It could be an internal drive or an external drive, but to make your computer less to create less anxiety for oneself, to keep data, personal data that you want to keep off the operating system drive. I think that's a key tip for people.
Yeah. Last week, Unreal made that point that you do not want to keep sensitive data on the same drive that your operating system is on, and I totally agree with that. If you have sensitive data, you definitely want to keep it on you know, either a big flash drive or, you know, like I've got archive drives in a draw. And, anything that you want to keep, you do not store it on the same drive as your operating system.
Did you say draw for drawer?
Draw.
I like it.
So what I was going to do with you guys is I was going to, mentally build a computer, go to the parts and kick around what parts you guys like and just kind of like virtually put it together, you know, in a talk, and then, you know, like maybe we could come back tomorrow and then talk about, installing the OS or like, I don't know how long it would take to hash out the parts that we would like to build in our imaginary PC. But,
we can just start now. I mean, just start with a motherboard. I mean, what most people want, I mean, you can get in any form factor. They all have sound cards. They all have LAN in. Some of them even have Wi-Fi built into them. So that's a huge benefit.
I was going to even go more basic than that, Gio. I was going to tell them where to get their parts. My first step would be to say to any newbie, go to Google and type in Newegg. That's one word. Newegg. Newegg. And you can also go to Amazon. It just so happens that I like the Newegg company, but you can find these same exact parts in Amazon if you have some kind of like Amazon points or customer loyalty points or something. You know, but if you start at Newegg has got a very easy system for finding the computer parts that you want. And from that point, I was going to go to the, I was going to ask, you know, a hypothetical listener, what do you want to do with your PC, right? You know, what exactly is your application? What do you want to do with your PC? And so I was going to talk about a couple of scenarios of what a potential, listener wanted. Like Gio, I'll ask you that question. If you were to build a PC today, what would you want it to do? What do you want to do with your PC?
Well, I would probably be a heavy graphical user since I use various monitors per system, like per one system. And sometimes I play, you know, just some video games, trying to get off that. But, I try to edit some videos. I make some WebMs and stuff for the internet, some memes. So like a little bit of heavy RAM, a decent GPU, nothing crazy. I mean, most of these modern, GPUs, video cards, you can get for $100 and they would be perfect for any ideal use.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Unreal, what do you think about that question? What do you use your PC for?
I use it for my work too. So it's like I would need some applications that are not commonly available on Linux. So I would need some kind of a virtual emulator. I think when it comes to what the common people would need, we should probably try to figure out a minimum configuration to do everything that we need to do as fakeologists, and do some audio and record video, and maybe some of the programs that is best suited to capture video and audio, to make our own copies of what we can see on YouTube and wherever. And the form factors are pretty important too. I think it's getting more and more common that you have the processor and the graphic chips together, and the form factor can get really small while still keeping a lot of power now.
Yeah, I just want to define those terms so that the average person, I don't know who's going to listen to this podcast, but I'm just going to assume that the person listening to the podcast is a complete newbie. So I just want to define those terms. When we're talking about form factor, right, what we're talking about usually is the size of the motherboard, right? And so the first question is, why would you want to have a different size motherboard? All right, and the answer to that question is more RAM slots. If you get a bigger motherboard, you've got more RAM slots for more RAM, and you've got more PCI slots for more PCI cards, right? For instance, the old school, in the old days, there was only one form factor, and it was called ATX, right? And it's a big motherboard about the size of your mouse pad.
And it's also a case factor.
Yeah, it's also the case is built around the size of the motherboard, so they call it an ATX case. Yeah, because it's built on it. In other words, it accommodates the size of the motherboard, so they call the case an ATX case because it accommodates an ATX motherboard, right? So when we're talking about form factor, we're usually talking about the motherboard size, right? And I just wanted to define the word motherboard. Right. I'm so familiar with this vocabulary that I just gloss over these words, and I want to make sure that the average guy understands what a motherboard is. Right. The motherboard is that piece of cardboard that's bolted to the case in the back, where the CPU is attached to it, and the RAM is attached to it, and the video card is attached to it, and all the plugs go into it from the power supply. That is the motherboard. It's basically just a really stiff piece of cardboard with capacitors and wires embedded into it. That's what a motherboard is. So, but Gio, did you have something else you want to say about that?
Yeah, I mean, ATX form factors aren't really the most beneficial factors. I think today, I think for a build that for a fakeologist, they would want a little setup, nothing too large, nothing too small. But something, yeah, you know, that looks kind of like a Xbox 360 size, you know.
Yeah. My personal preference is Mini ITX, and I was going to build a hypothetical Mini ITX build for that exact reason that you stated. But Unreal, do you have any input on form factor size?
Yeah, I think as Gio says, Mini ATX is a good shape, and having it in the size more or less of a Xbox is good.
Yeah, yeah. So just to explain to the hypothetical new listener that when we're talking about a Mini ITX build, what we're talking about is a very small motherboard. Right, and there are pluses and minuses to a very small motherboard. When you have a very small motherboard, you have one slot for a video card. Now, if you're a gamer, right, if you're a gamer, you may be interested in dual video cards, which you would need a bigger motherboard for that. I do some gaming, and when I game, I game at very high, graphical settings, and I've got a Mini ITX motherboard. I have never seen any need for a dual video card setup, but that's just me. That's my opinion, right? If you're a high-end gamer and for some reason, like you've done research where you think you might need two video cards, then have at it. Then you would need an ATX build, or I think at least a micro ATX. a micro ATX is one step larger than a mini ITX, and I think that it might have a dual video card setup, but that goes beyond our discussion. I'm envisioning building a basic machine just for the basic user. So the basic user doesn't need a dual video card setup. The other benefit to having an ATX motherboard is more PCI slots, which allows you to put in more PCI cards. Now, again, like, I have no need for extra PCI cards. I mean,
well, give an example of what these extensions would be.
Like a Fraps card? Is that what you were thinking, Gio?
Yeah, I mean, you could also get more output LAN cards to have more Cat 5 cables going to possibly a different server.
Yeah.
A wireless
or a
card
itself. Yeah. Or a server itself. Like, if you were going to build a server, you would want an ATX motherboard and an ATX tower. You know,
correct.
For the exact same reason that you just said, was you've got PCI cards with LAN extensions, and so you're not going to want to have if you're going to build a server, again, like, this goes out of the realm of our discussion because the average guy is not going to want to build a server. If you wanted to build a server, you wouldn't want to use a mini ITX, form factor, but
it does depend on what you're doing. I mean, people have laptops set up as servers, and they're just little file servers, and people access them throughout. Some people have little email servers set up on them. It all really depends on what you're doing. And for the minimal Fakeologist, I think you could set up a server, but we're going to go into the basics of just setting up a computer right now, I think.
Yeah. I had one guy over the past few years, I helped four guys build their computers, and I was always pushing for a mini ITX build. And they all went with the ATX build. And I think that the reason they went with the ATX build was because the mini ITX didn't look like their old computer. And they were more comfortable with the size of the big box. And so I said, okay, buy what you're comfortable with. So I had envisioned a mini ITX build for us to talk about a mini ITX build, because it is, it is the most basic. So, yeah.
Well, let's go into what are the companies that make mini ITX? Like, would it be Asus?
Asus, yeah. Asus. You've got baseboards by Intel and AMD. And what these third-party companies do is they license the technology from either ATM or AMD, and they build like their board. Like they take the Intel chipset or the AMD chipset, and they build the Asus board, or they build the MSI board, or what's another company? For some reason, I'm losing the names.
One of them's ASRock.
ASRock, yeah.
That's not really the best company, but I think the variations of AMD and Intel boards is the socket, the CPU socket, which is the fitting of the CPU. It's like matching it's like a female and male RCA wire.
Yeah. And that is that's very important to remember that when you make your build. I'm going to talk about just for simplicity's sake, I'm going to talk about Intel builds, and you guys can talk about AMD builds if you want to. I was researching AMD builds just for the our hypothetical listener to hear the whole story, and AMD builds are very viable. And if you go with an ATM or, oh my God, AMD build, you're going to save a boatload of cash, right? For example, the mini ITX motherboard that I was going to recommend from Intel, is about $150, right? But from AMD, it's only about $60, right? So, you know, the chip, the Haswell chip that I'm going to recommend that goes on to the mini ITX board that I'm going to recommend for Intel is about, I don't know, I think it's like about, let's say it's $200, right? Because they vary. But if you go to AMD, it's only like $95. So if you decide to research an AMD build rather than Intel, you're going to save a boatload of cash, and there's going to be absolutely no performance difference whatsoever. I was going to talk about an IBM or an Intel build only for simplicity's sake. I don't want it to sound like I'm endorsing one or the other, because they're both excellent products, just for simplicity's sake, right? What do you think, Gio?
No, I think Intel is probably it's the most widely used. They are the most leveraged company, so they are the ones doing the most development. But AMD is just right there with them, really. And you could tweak a CPU just to be, you know, to up it up a little bit if you wanted to once you get into the more advanced parts of it. But yeah, let's keep going with the LGA, probably what, 1155 CPU socket.
I was looking at the 1150, but Unreal, what do you think about it, Intel versus AMD? Any opinions? Did we lose Unreal?
Well, it looks like he's muted his mic, but I'll go on to say that AMD also has a GPU division, which makes pretty good graphic processors and graphics cards. So that's that's another facet of AMD, while Intel does create integrated graphics, which is on the same chip as the CPU. And they have that GPU integrated from Intel is really getting good.
Yeah. I was looking, you know, just to do a little research on AMD before you and I talked. I was looking at some sweet AMD motherboards and chips, and not only are they even less than half the price, but they are like blazing fast, and it's some really nice stuff. That was not available to me 1 year ago when I built the rig that I'm talking to you on right now. So, but yeah, but just for simplicity's sake, let's talk about a mini ITX build from Intel. And I was going to recommend, all right. So let me say this first, just to recap, why a mini ITX and why an Intel build? So if you go to Newegg, right, and you go to motherboard, right, Newegg will allow you to sift for mini ITX. So go to Newegg, go to motherboards, go to Intel boards, right, and then sift again for mini ITX. And what you will see is a whole bunch of little motherboards in front of you, right? Now, again, like, you can sift for AMD, and you can look at the mini ITX AMD boards, and that's fine. The only reason that I'm not talking about them is just for simplicity's sake, right? Because they're great boards and they're great products. What you're confronted with in Newegg is now a window that has, you know, it's got Asus, it's got AMD, it's like Gio said, it's got ASRock. And I think there's even one more. God damn it. Who makes the Stinger board? Gio, I can't remember the name of the company that makes the Stinger board.
I've never gotten into the names.
God damn it. It's one of the sweetest boards I've seen in a long time. It's a mini ITX board, and it's called the Stinger. And it's a sweet board, and I just can't remember the name of the company that put the damn thing out. I'm going outside.
EVGA.
EVGA, damn it, yes. Oh, it's a sweet mini ITX motherboard, and it is it's really highly rated. If you can filter again for things that are highly rated. And I recommend doing that.
Wow, you know, that's a really nice board right there. It's the color of it is really nice, mostly black, a little red. It's loaded with USB 3.0s and E-serial SATs. That's wow.
Yeah, it's a nice little board. I wanted that board really bad, but because I'm in Korea, I couldn't get it. They had every board except the EVGA board. There was nothing I could do about it. If I wanted that board, I had to buy it and have it shipped overseas. The problem is that if there's a problem with the board, and that does happen, right, sometimes you'll just get a bad board. I mean, most of the time you'll get a board and it has no problem at all. But sometimes you get a bad board and it's got to be sent back, and you can't do that from South Korea. You know, the shipping back and forth to South Korea, you wind up paying $400 for a $150 board. So I just went with Asus, and Asus, the one I've got. I've got the H97i, and it's pretty damn sweet. So but what you can do, and again, I'm talking to the hypothetical newbie computer guy, is go up to the top of the page and sift for highest rating, and there'll be some boards will have like two eggs out of five, and some will have three eggs out of five, and at the top of the page you'll see the five eggs out of five, right?
And eggs are good.
Eggs are good. Yep. And what you want to do is you want to read their opinions, because a lot of these guys are super smart. They know their computer technology, and they're going to tell you the truth, at what happened when they got that board. And, some of them have had bad experiences. This is the reason that I like Asus. It's a big company, and they put out – I've never gotten a bad board from Asus. So I always stick with Asus, and I get flamed for that, actually.
I've never gotten a bad board, though. Yeah, which is nice. I don't know.
Yeah, which is, I mean, I've built about maybe seven or eight computers total in my life, and you're right, I've never gotten a bad board either. But it does happen. I mean, you can read the reviews where guys get dead boards, and it happens. So.
Well, it always happens with the production. How much they're pulling out.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So. I don't know, but so after you decide, Gio, let's just talk about form factor numbers before we move on. I am talking about a Haswell build. Okay, now when I say the word Haswell, what the hell am I talking about? All right, there are generations of chips in Intel. All right, and the same thing for AMD. I don't have the names memorized for AMD. But for Intel, I have the names sort of memorized. If you go back about my computer build about 6 years ago used a Sandy Bridge processor, right? And the next generation of Intel chips was called Ivy Bridge. And the latest Intel chip is called Haswell, okay? And the form factors for Sandy Bridge and for Ivy Bridge, it was 1155 and 1156, right? For Haswell, it's 1150, right? There is some confusion here, right? But, again, like I'm talking to the newbie computer user, focus on those numbers, right? Focus on them until you understand those numbers, because you have to buy a chip that is a Haswell chip that fits onto a Haswell board. If you buy an Ivy Bridge chip and try and stick it into a Haswell board, it will short out and it'll catch fire. And there is a picture of a guy, right, who complained to, he took a picture of his motherboard and it had caught fire and it was all melted, right? And he complained that, that his brand new chip and Asus motherboard, had a major flame out. Right. And man, he got destroyed on the web when he did that, because what he did was he had bought an Ivy Bridge chip and he had forced it into the Haswell slot, and then he turned his computer on. And
devastating.
Yeah, I know, dude. That was a major bonehead move. And then he took a picture of it, and then he put it on the web for all posterity.
Some people don't know what not to divulge on the internet.
Yeah, I know. I mean, there was another guy who put up a video of he just built his brand new sweet rig, and it was you know he was so excited about his new rig that you know he put together a tech video, and you could see the video or his rig in the background, and it did not have a fan on it. Right. And he's like, OK, I'm going to fire it up for the first time. And he clicks the button and it goes, it starts to read the BIOS. And all of a sudden, poof, it just goes out. And he's like, motherfucker, my brand new, you know. And then he turns around and he sees that he forgot to put the fan on the chip.
Wow.
Oh, man. I you know, big thumbs up to that guy for actually putting, you know, for going ahead and putting that boneheaded move up on YouTube for everyone to see, you know, because he figured it out later that he just forgot to put the fan on the chip, you know.
Well, just, I wish it was old gear. I mean, you can do that with a Pentium 4, but.
Yeah, but yeah, the new ones, forget it.
You know, I want to interject real quick for a privacy note. If you, new Intel chips have this new add-on, and supposedly, I don't know, this is kind of conspiracy realm, it's called vPro, and it supposedly put a 3G chip in all the, I forget what generation, I think Ivy Bridge might have been the first, but there's a 3G chip that connects to cellular networks and allows for people, it's more of like a, they call it a privacy protector, because if your computer's stolen, they can log into it remotely and turn it off. But I know they're on all new chips, especially like maybe 2 years and older.
Dude, I knew there was a good reason for going AMD.
Yeah, and that is a good reason, or just buy an older CPU. That's also.
That's funny. So there's a consideration. I didn't even know that, dude. And I have got to talk about that later. So I didn't even know that. We've got our hypothetical motherboard, and again, let me just reemphasize that you've got a Haswell motherboard, right? And your Haswell motherboard will say 1150. Right. As you scroll down in Newegg, and you can do the same thing in Amazon if you want to. But when you scroll down in Newegg, you will see the chip form factor, and it will say Haswell 1150. Right. And you want to go to the motherboard, scroll down and see what chips that motherboard accepts. And it will say 1150 Haswell, or it'll say 1155. Ivy Bridge. Now, guys, Ivy Bridge is about 3 years old. You know, the Haswell chips have been around for at least 2 years. So people aren't really buying Ivy Bridge anymore unless you go to Best Buy. You know, and when you go to Best Buy and you buy one of those cheap computers, probably what you're getting is an Ivy Bridge chip or like a Sandy Bridge. That's why they're so cheap, because they're using the Estertech, right? Just about everything that you see on Newegg is Haswell these days, but you just want to check, all right? You don't want to be that guy that buys the Ivy Bridge chip and trying to jam it into a Haswell motherboard. You do not want to be that guy, okay? Look at those specs carefully, right? It's not difficult. You just have to look, all right? Make sure that you're buying a Haswell motherboard and a Haswell chip, okay? Or you're buying an Ivy Bridge motherboard and an Ivy Bridge chip. Do not mix the two. Okay. All right. So, what do you think the next step should be after that, Gio?
Probably, we have to think back of how much RAM a person would need. Usually just 8 gigabytes, right? I think that's probably the next step.
Yeah. There's a sweet spot from what I've read. And I went through, before I built my last rig, I went through all the tech talk on what the appropriate amount of RAM was. Again, this comes back to, what do you want to do, right? Now, I've got 8 gigs of RAM, and the reason I've got 8 gigs of RAM is because I had read, right? I did my research, and what the consensus among all the tech guys was that even Maximum PC Magazine had said at the time that the sweet spot was 8 gigs of RAM. So I went with 8 gigs of RAM. Now, you could do very, very well with 4 gigs of RAM, right? If that's what you want, like if you're not gaming, right, and you're not doing, a lot of apps all at the same time, even if you are doing a lot of apps all at the same time, and they weren't heavy applications that weren't taking up a lot of CPU time, you could still probably get away with 4 gigs of RAM. So I just helped my friend, about a month ago, put together his rig, and he put in 32 gigabytes of RAM into this beast that he put together, all right? And the question is, why the hell wouldn't, if you can get away with 4 gigabytes and the sweet spot is 8 gigabytes, why would anyone go to 32 gigabytes, all right? This is his reasoning. First of all, it's cheap. And right there, he's got me, all right? If the RAM prices are really low, load up, if you're going to get 32 gigabytes of RAM for nearly the same price that you're going to get 8 gigabytes for, you might as well have 32 gigabytes of RAM, right? Another reason is he uses 3 or 4 monitors at a time, right? Now, the way I do computing is I have one rig and I have one monitor, right? That's just the way I do it, Even when I'm gaming, I don't have dual monitors. I mean, there are guys that, like Geo, plays Counter-Strike, and sometimes it's necessary to have dual monitors when you're playing Counter-Strike, right? But that is for guys that are at high levels of gaming, right? If you're not doing high levels of gaming, you don't need two monitors, right? If you have an application where you need two monitors, you're going to need more RAM, right? But you don't need that much more. And I'm thinking when I say you need more RAM, you probably only need 8 gigs, right? So, if you go with a mini ITX build, you're only going to have 2 RAM slots, okay? Now, this is why my friend went with an ATX build, right? Because he uses so many monitors. He's using 2 video cards, and he needed a lot of RAM. All right. He does a lot of virtual machine where he's running. He's a database and network guy, and so he's always running virtual machines. Like he is running Linux with virtual. He's virtual machining Windows and Apple at the same time. Right. I don't do that. I don't do that stuff. That kind of computing takes up a lot of resources.
Yeah, so, you have to dedicate a certain amount of RAM per virtual machine, whether it be through VMware, which is a paid service, or a free service, which is, I can't think of it, it's from Oracle VirtualBox.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, that's way beyond, I'm talking to my hypothetical computer newbie.
Yeah, they can search those, and those are just programs to know and, get familiar with.
Yeah. If you have an application for that, then that's fine. But if you don't have an application for that, then, I know Unreal does some of that stuff.
If as a Fakeologist, you are going through many tabs, most likely on Explorers. And, for myself, it can add up to a lot. I have 16 gigabytes, and sometimes I hit 12 gigabytes by the time I'm, done searching articles and going, having various tabs open, which is very memory intensive. That's one aspect. But 16 gigabytes is really probably the top you would ever need. And it's not too much money. It's probably, 150, I think I paid.
Yeah. From what my friend tells me is that RAM prices have fallen through the roof. It's very cheap now to load your PC up with a lot of RAM. You know, and a meaning, and you've, on, when talking about RAM, you're talking about, dual channel RAM. And, I don't know the ins and outs of dual channel, but I do know that when you're talking about dual channel, you're talking about higher speeds, which is nice. But if you only have one, RAM card, you don't get the benefits of dual channel, hence the title dual channel, right? On even the Mini ITX board, you have two slots for RAM because they assume dual channel RAM, right? So what you want to buy is, you know, 2 8-gigabyte, you know, RAM cards, right? You can buy one single, RAM card if you want to. You lose the benefits of dual channel when you do that. But, if you're, you know, if you're doing just regular computing, you're not going to see that much of a performance hit anyway, you know? And guys, just a side note on computer performance. Computer performance is a sales point, right? And, a lot of times, you're being sold, right? Don't allow yourself to be sold, right? When you're talking about differences in megahertz or gigahertz or system speeds or things like that, you're talking about imperceptible, measurements in speed gains that only another computer can measure, right? For instance, there's a guy on the web who, he bought into the hype of the i7, the Intel i7. And he does a lot of video encoding, right? He had an old AMD rig, right? And his old AMD rig was like 5 years old, and it was an AMD, you know, it was a cheap build, right?
And so he goes out. And let the listener know that i7 is the top notch, Intel processor. There's i3, which is the lowest, i5, which is middle range, and then i7, and it's the most expensive.
Yeah, it has the i7s are slightly faster in system speed, in chip speed, and they also have the most on-chip cache, the most on-chip size of the cache memory. So he goes out, and I think he was really pissed off in his YouTube video. He went out and he spent like $3,000, and then he did a comparison. He video edited something in his old AMD box, and then he video edited the same exact thing in his new Intel i7, no holds barred, break the bank PC. And the difference in speed was about 5 seconds. And he was so pissed off that he made a YouTube video telling everybody what a scam this is. And if he had asked me, I would have told him, you know, right up front, you know, that when you're talking about the speed, like I benchmarked my computer yesterday, and I'm overclocked at about 4.2, and compared to, you know, on the benchmarks, I scored really high, but that's a benchmark. That's a synthetic benchmark. When you're talking about real world applications, like if me and Gio were like playing World of Warcraft right now, and he's using an old, you know, an old machine, and I'm using my, you know, super brand new, you know, overclocked, there would be absolutely no difference whatsoever. There would be no difference whatsoever. All right. You know, that's something that, you know, we're being sold all the time on these, you know, well, you know, mine's 3 gigahertz. Well, mine's overclocked to 4 gigahertz. Oh yeah. Well, I've overclocked mine to 4.5. These are imperceptible measurements in speed gain, perceptible only by another computer. So when it comes down to real world applications, do you need that kind of speed? No. All right. When you go to buy your Haswell chip, right, or whatever chip you decide, do not allow yourself to be intimidated by system speeds, right? For ABS build, I had recommended a Haswell chip that ran at a steady 3 gigahertz, right? It was not a K version. It was not overclockable. It was just ran at 3 gigahertz, right? What is the difference between his computer and mine? About 1 gigahertz in speed. What does that mean in real world applications? It means nothing. All right. So do not allow yourself to be sold. You know.
And I would say probably the only reason to go to an i5 from the i3, which is the base processor, which works for any pretty much any type of world of computing that anyone would really need, is that the i5 could it can compile and video like process video editing software a little bit faster because it's CPU intensive.
Yeah. So we've covered the motherboard, the chip, and the RAM, right? And guys, putting together a putting these components on your on your computer is super easy, right? All you have to do the most tedious part is slipping the chip into the motherboard. Guys, just be careful. Follow the instructions exactly. Do exactly what the instructions say when you put that chip into that motherboard. Go to the go to YouTube and type in how to install a CPU into a motherboard and watch that video. And do it exactly like the directions say and exactly the way they tell you to do it on the video. Do it that way. Don't do it any other way. All right? The reason is because if you do it any other way, excuse me, there's the CPU has got very, very fine hairs that connect to the motherboard. And if you put it in a way that they don't recommend, you'll bend those hairs and you'll destroy the chip.
Right? They're not hairs. They're tiny little pins.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's super, super tiny. And the reason I call them hairs is because they are about the they are about as sensitive as the hairs on a newborn baby, right? They're, you know, you blow on that thing the wrong way and you're going to bend those freaking pins, right?
Yeah, so, don't even touch it. Just take it out of the box and then make sure you know what you're doing.
Yeah. So, and yes, thank you for correcting me on pins. I was searching around for so early in the morning here that pins wasn't coming to me. But yeah, they're as fine as the hairs on your newborn son. So anyway, putting in RAM, you don't have to be ginger around a motherboard after you put the chip in. I'm not saying beat it with a hammer, but you do not have to be ginger with it either. The motherboard is reasonably tough, and you can push on it with weight if you have to. And you really don't have to, but don't be afraid to push down on the RAM stick to make sure it's fully it's fully seated. Just make sure that the notch is lined up. Right, there's a notch in your RAM, and there's a notch on the insertion point on the motherboard. Make sure that they're lined up, all right? Don't jam, the RAM in backwards. Make sure it's lined up, and then push it down firmly, and it'll snap into place. It's not a big deal. And then installing the fan, just install it the way the directions tell you to install it, and then lift up the motherboard and look underneath to make sure that the pins have come all the way through the back end. Right. There have been a couple times where I've pushed it in and I thought it was in, and then all of a sudden it started making noise and I had to unbuild the whole build and then pull the motherboard out and then turn it upside down. And what happened is that the pin did not go all the way through the motherboard and didn't lock onto the board. And so I was getting fan noise. So you mean
the heat sink to the motherboard. You got to make sure that those locking pins, there's going to be four around them. You have to make sure they're securely on because you don't want any gap between the metal heat sink and the thermal paste and the CPU. You want to have that so that it constantly is absorbing the heat and cooling the CPU.
Yeah, and guys, don't worry about thermal paste. Geo just used the word thermal paste, and
it's applied on for most stock.
The thermal paste is already on. If you turn the heatsink over, there's like a little gray padded area. That is the thermal paste. So what's going to happen is the heat of the CPU will melt that gray patch, and that becomes your thermal paste. So don't worry about I've got an aftermarket tower, so I actually had to apply thermal paste to my CPU. But you you know, the hypothetical newbie computer builder does not. All right. Don't worry about thermal paste. All right. Just, you know, when you push down on those push pins, for the heat sink, just, flip the board over and make sure that the pins have come all the way through the back end of the motherboard and have locked in. All right. Okay. So, we've got motherboard. We've got the chip. We've got the RAM. And, what about video card, Gio?
I think, like, just look, I mean, if you think you would possibly need any dual monitors or multiple monitors, you will be looking at a video card. But, if you're not looking to, play, to be video gaming or doing any graphical intense, editing, you probably would just want around $100, GPU, either from AMD or NVIDIA. Yeah.
As a side note, I built a PC just for running, and I built a second PC just for running an application on my television for my students, and I did not use a video card, right? Because I wasn't going to play games, and you know, I wasn't going to do anything other than running Rosetta Stone, which is a languaging program. And I did not put in a video card, right? The first operating system I ran through it was Linux, and Linux worked flawlessly, right? And then, right, I had to wipe the drive. I had to use Windows because Rosetta Stone is a Windows-only application. So I wiped Linux, and I laid down it was Windows 8.1. And Windows 8.1 did not work, right? And the reason it didn't work is because I had no video card, right? So Windows did not work without a video card. What I had to do was I had to call my buddy, who's the same guy who's the database expert who I helped put together a rig for, and he helped me download a driver for the board because I didn't have a video card. yeah, the magic of Bill Gates and Windows. My recommendation is some kind of video card if you're going to use Windows, right? You know, if you're going to use Linux and you're not doing any gaming, right? I would buy a video card anyway, just in case, right? Your nephew or your niece comes over and wants to play some video games, the card is in there, all right? So they're cheap. So I would throw it in there anyway. I've got a pretty sweet card. I've got an Asus GTX 660. And the Asus GTX 660, I think, is on sale for like $150. And the Asus GTX 660 is the sweetest video card I've ever bought. 2 gigs of video RAM. You are, unless you are doing multiple monitors, you know, gaming at an extremely high level with multiple monitors, you're never going to run out of video RAM. It's a really good card, but you can find cards that are even cheaper than that.
Yeah, I'm running a 560 Ti, and that's like it has 2 gigabytes. Actually, no, it's only got 1 gigabyte. It's really like nothing, and I haven't had any complaints at all. Yeah. And I use multiple monitors, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, there you have it. You know, my friend that I just, you know, built that monster rig for, you know, he's into multiple monitors, and here you have Gio saying, you know, I just have 1 gig of video RAM, and it works just fine with multiple monitors. You know, it all depends on what you think you're going to do with it. You know, research it before you buy it. Like if you have a particular application, like you're listening to me now and you're saying, you know, I really want to build my own rig, but I don't want to necessarily build a basic one because I'd love to do, let's say, I don't know, what's the latest graphics intensive game, Crysis? Or is that old school now?
I think it's a game called Witcher 3. I've never played it, but I hear people with even dual graphics cards can barely handle 60 FPS on 1440p, which is the maximum resolution at the moment.
Wow, that's amazing. FPS, frames per second. There's a good reason for having a high level of frames per second. As our eyes see at a particular frame rate, and if it falls too far below, you will begin to see aberrations on your screen. So it depends what you want. You know, like if you want the latest game, on the ultra settings set up on your big screen television, you know, then you're gonna need a big expensive video card. But if you don't, right, if you just want to play like let's say Geo's game just on a regular monitor, even at ultra or just high settings. You know, I've never seen a difference between high settings and ultra, but I guess there's some guys out there that have, very discerning eyes. And, I've never
seen it. No, don't let them fool you. Those are fakeologists. Those guys are fakery. I'm running two big monitors, 124, 130 inch off a 1 gigabyte 650 Ti EVGA NVIDIA. Yeah. And it's like $100 GPU. It's perfect.
Yeah, very cool. Guys, do your research. Google is your friend. if you have a question about any of this stuff, just Google that question. And, I can guarantee there are 50 other guys that had the same question that have already had answers posted to their questions. You can find out the answers to your questions in seconds. Any question that you have, just go right to Google. So we've got the motherboard chip, the video card. Why don't we talk about the case?
Yeah, form factor is, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so what you've got to do is you've got to match. Remember that this is a mini ITX imaginary build. So with our imaginary mini ITX build, you've got to, you have to have a corresponding PC case, right? So if you buy a mini ITX motherboard, but you buy an ATX case, right, the mini ITX, first of all, is going to look funny, but second, it's not actually going to fit in there, right, because the holes in the back of the motherboard are not going to match to the holes on the case, and that would be a major fail. You do not want that.
Yeah, it's like getting a landscape frame for a horizontal photo.
Yeah. also, you've got the import-output ports on the back, and they will not match the back of an ATX case if you have a mini ITX board. So my point is that go back to Newegg, right, and this time go to PC cases, right, and then sift, right, filter for mini ITX cases, and then again, excuse me, filter again for best rated. What you're going to see at the top, oh my God, sorry, dude, I'm going hoarse. There we go. I have no cough button. So what you're going to see at the top is the editor's choice. And at the top of the list is Corsair Obsidian. And it's a pretty sweet case. I have others that I prefer, but it's a pretty damn sweet case. Do you have any preferences with cases, dude? Geo, still with me? Uh-oh. Geo? Oh, man, Geo, I lost you. Okay, I'm going to have to riff solo.
I'm back, sorry.
Oh, it's okay, dude. I was going to ask you if you had a preference for cases.
It depends on really what you want. I mean, you can get with mini ATX, you can get like a small case that doesn't have many hard drive bays, that looks, just as big as like a PlayStation or Xbox. And those are kind of nice.
Mm, yep. I was going to talk about hard drive versus SSD next. And that is a consideration, when with my build, and what I'm going to recommend to my hypothetical newbie PC builder person that we're talking to is just go with one SSD, right? Now I have two, right? And the question is, why do I have two? And the reason is because I've got two operating systems. I've got Linux on one SSD, and I've got Windows on another SSD. And the reason that I have Windows on one SSD is because I have a Windows-only application, and that is for my students. It's Rosetta Stone, but I haven't used it. I haven't actually used my Windows partition in so long. But for the average guy out there, they just need one SSD. And but again, like hypothetical newbie PC builder, you have to think about what you want, right? Like my friend that I just built a new PC for, the guy with the 32 gigabytes of RAM, he has got one SSD, and then he's got, I think, three hard drives. Okay, so let me make the distinction between SSD and hard disk. Okay, the hard disk is 20-year-old technology. That is that silver block. It's a silver rectangle, right? And they've been using these things forever, right? It's got the rotating platters on the inside of a stainless steel silver rectangular enclosure, right? And it's heavy, right? That is what you call a hard drive, okay? And that technology is 20 years old, right? What they've got these days is an SSD. It's new technology. It's still rectangular, but what it looks like is one of those old school floppy disks, right? And it is light as a graham cracker, right? But it is super fast, right? And also, there's no moving parts in an SSD, so not only is it super fast, but it is ultimately silent. There are no parts to wear out. No parts are vulnerable to vibration. And there is no sound that comes out of them whatsoever because there's no moving parts, right? And they also don't get hot, right? So they don't need to be cooled. For my hypothetical newbie PC builder, I'm going to recommend one SSD, right? And it doesn't have to be a big SSD. Like, I've got a 250 gigabyte SSD, and you can go with the 500 gigabyte SSD if you think that's what you need. But my recommendation is no, all right? And I'll tell you why, and I'll see if Gio agrees with me, is the SSD is what you want to keep your operating system on, all right? And you do not want to keep sensitive data on the same drive as your SSD. Now, I have been through this with I don't know how many of my friends that don't fucking listen to me. Right, they put sensitive data on the same drive that they put a crappy operating system like Windows on, right? And then Windows has a major malfunction, right? And they lose all their data, right? And, I mean, these are PowerPoints that one of my friends does a lot of PowerPoint work. These are PowerPoint presentations that he has put hours into, maybe into hundreds of hours. And when that operating system went kablooey, those PowerPoints went poof. All right, guys, listen to me. Do not save your important data on the same drive that you've got your operating system on. Okay, if you want to go out and buy a big USB flash drive to save your data, that's fine. All right, I have got archive hard drives in a drawer. All right, that I was talking to about Gio before, making fun of me saying draw.
Oh yeah, I like right. it. I like it.
Yep. But those are two terabyte drives duplicated, right? My data is so important to me that I don't only back it up once, but I back it up twice, right? And these are on old, hard drives that are their only function is to archive. You know, I take them out of my drawer, right? I plug it in. I update you know, let's say like I've got a new movie that I like, I want to save, I update it, and then I put it back in the drawer, and it does not come out of the drawer again until I want to update those drives, which is usually like once every 2 or 3 or 4 weeks, right? All right. So, my friend with the 32 gigabytes of RAM, right? He wanted his hard drives inside the enclosure, right? Now, why did he want that? He wanted that because he wanted fast access to his data, right? He's a gamer and he's got about 1,000 friggin' games, right? And whenever he wanted to play, you know, a game that he hasn't played for 5 years, he wanted to be able to pull it up instantaneously. So he's got his hard drives inside his rig. Okay. I don't game like that. All right. I don't compute like that. Right. But he does. Right. And if you game that way, or if you compute that way, then you may want to consider a same setup as my friend. Right. the drawbacks are this. Anytime that you, the old school hard drives are constantly rotating, right? So if you've got them plugged into your motherboard, that means even though you're not accessing them, they're spinning, which means they're wearing out, all right? Another thing is if you've got sensitive data in there and there's a power surge that comes through your power supply, it's going to blow out everything, including your hard drives, and your data is going to evaporate. That's one of the reasons that I put archive drives in a draw, because if there's a power surge and that blows out my PC, my data's not lost. Oh man, Gio, I'm going hoarse. Oh, so
take a sip, take your time.
Yeah. Oh man, I'm dying for a second cup of coffee too, dude. Oh Jesus, and I got to go to the bathroom.
We've been talking for quite a while.
Yeah, I know, dude. This is the downside of doing a live stream.
Yeah, we're doing it live.
Yeah, so no bathroom breaks, no commercials.
I could put on a song.
Or you could just do you could rap one or the other. I mean, you just want to, dude, can you keep the conversation going for a few minutes while I use the bathroom and get something to drink?
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, I'll go on with about the hard drive.
Go for it, dude. And I wish I could sit here and listen to your opinion. I got to go to the can. All right, dude, give me a couple minutes. I'll be right back.
All right. The opinions are definitely of O'Hallahan. They're correct. But I would agree that you should probably buy an SSD. The prices have come down quite a lot in the following years, and the speeds and the reliability of the new drives, mostly from Intel and Samsung, are very good. And their read-write capacity, which is the speed in which information can pass through and be loaded onto, you know, your system and your operating system, increases tenfold when you switch from hard drive, from spinning platters, to solid state drives, which is what SSD stands for. So having an SSD, your boot time from a cold boot when your computer is completely off, when you hit the on button, it takes for the most part 10 seconds max, even for any crappy computer. It revitalizes old systems. So if you have an old computer that isn't working correctly, you might be able to just put in a SSD and have it working probably better than the day you bought it. Definitely invest in your operating system drive to be a SSD. And hard drives are still an important factor in computers, because it is a very cheap and they have large storage capacity drives now that range up to 6 terabytes, which is 6,000 gigabytes, which is a lot of information that can be stored on these. So any archival programs, movies, pictures, music, documentaries, books, you want to save them to a hard drive for the most part. And like O'Hallahan does, he saves, I mean, you can only save, you can just save one offsite. with all your valuable information that you want to keep, because yes, your computer is vulnerable at all times, and if your hard drive is plugged in, sometimes it will stop spinning. It won't be used constantly, but it can hinder its life expectancy. So, but it's surprising how cheap solid state drives are now. So get on that. They're only going to get cheaper. I would probably suggest 500 gigabytes and lower, because the 1 terabyte drives are insanely overpriced at the moment. We are speaking in late August 2015. So. I'm not sure how much of this audio gets cut out, but hopefully a good chunk of it right here. Good old break. Right here, waiting on O'Hallahan.
Yeah, you can leave it silent. If you leave it silent, then it'll just get clipped out.
O'Hallahan's mic is constantly going off, so I'm not sure how much of it is going to be gut.
Yeah. Oh, I see. I wanted to ask you guys, have you done the processor yet? Choosing the processor?
Yes, we went over that a little bit. We're not too far down. I think we're kind of almost wrapping it up.
Because on the I got a dual core, and it was an expensive machine, I thought, and couldn't handle the audio processing. So I was quite annoyed by the guy that sold it to me. And it turns out I needed at least a quad core that was able to handle the audio processing. And then I bought a used AMD, and it says it's a 6-core. That works pretty well, too.
Yeah, it depends on what programs you utilize. They're getting better now. But I think a dual-core, it might be hindered a bit for audio. Are you running on the AMD now?
No, I'm calling my phone. I'm saying that I use an AMD 6-core. And it's able to handle the audio. But when I brought a brand new Intel dual core, I'm guessing it was an i3, whatever the bottom one was, could not handle the audio, not keep up. And I had asked the guy if it would have kept up. And, of course, he's just a sales guy. He said, yeah, sure. But I was quite annoyed that it couldn't handle it.
Hey, guys, I'm back.
All right.
Hey, Gio. Oh. All right.
That's why. That's why I wanted to know.
Well, you should.
The processor you're recommending is at least a quad core.
Yeah, we're recommending quad core and all that. We're recommending probably like an i5. There's some i3s that are more dual core, but it depends on what the clock speed is for the most part.
Hmm.
which is like it's either like 2.5 gigahertz, 3 gigahertz.
Because I use audio repeaters, and the processor was bogging down and just wasn't working.
When you say bogging down, what did you actually check to see if your chip was being overloaded?
No, I'm not that smart. I honestly did not know what to do. I just knew it wasn't working. My exact setup was not working on this dual core system. I just duplicated my Windows audio setup. It did not work. It could not keep up. So the audio is getting held back. There was delays, and it just did not work.
Yeah.
And that's why I was annoyed that I would have spent that kind of money and got a machine that was slower than my AMD. It says it's a 6-core. Windows information says it's an AMD 6-core, whatever that is.
Well, it's six little processors inside the chip. So and AMD is supposed to be really good for that. AMD's chips are supposed to be really good. You know, there's actually a conspiracy theory in the PC world that Intel has paid off a lot of these magazines and websites to push their products.
That's as old as the hills, though. These kind of ideas are Coke pays the grocery stores. That, of course, there's graft and business all over the place. I don't think that's really a conspiracy theory. I think it's conspiracy fact.
Yeah. There's
marketing.
A guy on the web. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, marketing, yeah.
Yeah, there's a guy on the web that he got real loud about that on a YouTube video. He he had bought into the Intel hype, but he had the money to do two builds, and he did two. And he did a side-by-side comparison of his favorite games run on both machines. And he says that they're running equal, and sometimes AMD is actually pushing ahead. You know, there's an imperceptible imperceptible by humans difference between the two chips, and a lot of hype is built on these synthetic benchmarks, which only another computer can check, you know. And it's, you know, that's bullshitty. You know, that's a sales point, you know.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to take your recommendation on whatever you're going to build, and I'm going to link to all your parts, if it's okay with you, on Amazon, so I might potentially get a spiff if anyone clicks on them, including myself. I always click on my own links. But I wanted to make sure the processor – whatever you're recommending could handle the audio repeaters that I use.
I don't know exactly the ins and outs of what happened or what didn't happen and what exactly you had and didn't have. What we're talking about is what Gio said. You know, I linked to you an Intel i5 three gigahertz chip, and I don't see any reason why there's anything that you could possibly do that would overload that chip.
How many processors is that? Or how many threads?
It's a quad-core chip.
Okay.
You know, quad being four, you know.
Yeah, that should work then.
Yeah, but, it's blazing fast, you know. I think that we could build our own Apollo rocket and send it to the moon with that chip.
Okay. As long as it can handle the audio, I don't care where it goes. I just need it to handle the audio and not get all choked up.
I think that chip would make it through the Van Allen radiation belt, actually. So,
what? Seven? I'm sorry. You have seven repeaters?
Well, I have seven audio repeaters, yeah.
That's interesting.
I've never even heard of audio repeaters.
Yeah.
Well, what it does is it allows me to play audio through the different audio
programs,
virtual. Yeah, basically, I can play YouTube in the Skype. I put that kind of thing, and they're
that's
just
awesome.
simple software audio repeaters. But they were obviously getting tied up in the processor, and you know, if audio gets tied up, it doesn't come through at the right time.
To me,
that sounded like a processor issue.
Did you monitor your RAM usage at the time?
No, I didn't monitor anything. I just bought a new machine And just like the average consumer, I just said, buy me, this is how much I can spend, give me something good. And they probably just took me to the cleaners with old parts, like O'Hallahan said.
Well, if it chokes up again, check up your memory usage. You can just Google that.
I just don't use that machine. I just don't use the machine for audio. I use my old machine, which was a used thing. I usually bought used machines because I bought high-end used machines, and they're more power than the new machines for the same price.
That's a good way to go.
Yeah, it's actually a good idea.
But if O'Hallahan can make us a new machine with new parts, and I was hoping that this wouldn't happen again.
Yeah. Yeah, it shouldn't. I don't see any reason why it would. But you can pull up there's a program in Windows. In Linux, it's called System Resources, but I think it's called the same thing in Windows. And you put it on your desktop, and when you run your app, you can see how much CPU is being used, how much RAM is being used. So you can get an idea. Like if you run that app that you're running and you cap out your CPU at 100%, first of all, that would be amazing. I've never seen that outside of synthetic burn-in
benchmarks.
Yeah, benchmark. Yeah, like when Prime 95. Prime 95 is the only thing that I've ever seen that maxed out my CPU. I'm not exactly sure what you're doing, but it might be so CPU intensive that it maxes it out. But see for yourself, you know. I mean, Geo could be right. It could be maxing out your RAM, and that could be the bottleneck. There's some bottleneck in there, you know.
The repeaters are very tiny little programs. But again, because it's audio, you notice it. Because, of course, if the audio doesn't come through at the right time, you're going to hear issues.
It could also be a sound card issue. You know, does your old machine have a sound card and your new machine doesn't?
No. I don't even know what a sound – no, there's no sound cards. They're all on the motherboard, I'm assuming. Well, maybe I'm wrong. I don't think they – I never asked for a sound card, so.
Yeah, it's most likely a motherboard.
Yeah. Aren't the sound the connections to the sound, aren't they just jacks on the back connected to the motherboard?
Yeah. We were talking earlier about PCI slots, and that's one of the reasons that some people have larger motherboards is to accommodate a sound card.
Yeah.
You know, they play their guitar into their computer, which has to be processed by an aftermarket card.
Processor.
Yeah, mixer. Yeah. So, those are
but
reasons
the one,
to not
the
not
mini
buy
thing you're
right.
recommending yeah. is a single PCI, and you use the PCI for your video card. Is that what I'm getting?
There's usually PCIe. There's a bigger slot. It's like every motherboard usually has a PCI times 16, I think, express.
They call it PCIe. And the PCIe slot is for your video card. The PCI slots are just for just regular cards. So you're saying
that this build has one slot, and that's
what
you
only
use
for
it
the
for?
Video card. Yeah. So that's the only. It only has one slot, and that's for a video card. Other than that, there's no other. But like for me, I don't use other cards. So you have to think about what you want. You know, if you want aftermarket cards, then you have to take that into consideration.
Well, I don't think so.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't sound like one. Onboard is fine.
Yeah.
I just want something that can drive the audio.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah, there are Asus has a ROG has a ROG product line. And ROG is ROG, Republic of Gamers, and they have very, very high-end audio. And so it may be worth, you know, getting a ROG motherboard just for the sound, you know. Look into it before you buy, because ROG boards are twice as expensive as other boards. Think about what you want and what you.
Well, that's
you know.
What I would want. It's for podcasting, you know. That's what I would use it for. So you're saying it's a special motherboard just that can handle audio?
Yeah, it's got an aftermarket card built into it. And And it's really high end stuff that's made for gamers. And, you know, for, in other words, like, you know, Geo is playing a game called Counter-Strike. And, what good audio software does is it allows you to use a multi-directional headset where you can actually hear the footsteps of your opponent sneaking up on you from a direction, a particular direction. And having good sound will, allow you to know what direction your opponent's coming from by listening. Right.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so that is, that's a component to a really high-end gamer motherboard. But it has, you know, go to the web, go to Google, type in Asus ROG, and, you know, read it for yourself. You know, you can filter for the Mini ITX ROG board. And I don't recommend, I normally don't recommend gamer boards because they're usually scammy. You know, there's a lot of, you know, like being sold, and you have to be careful not to be sold, right? Gamer boards are twice as expensive as regular boards. But a lot of guys don't use the functionality of a gamer board, you know. But if you're like Geo playing Counter-Strike and you want that precise audio, then it's worth it, you know. But if you don't, you know, like if you're just playing World of Warcraft, you know, you don't need a ROG board to play World of Warcraft, you know. I mean, these days, all you need is a cell phone to play World of Warcraft. You know, that game is so friggin' old. But
you don't want to buy this one certain motherboard that was out like 2 years ago, and it had an AK-47 on the chipset, and it had like a magazine of bullets on it. It was such a weird motherboard that was just pandering to like Call of Duty kids. It was so funny, and it was like $300.
I saw it. I did see it. Yeah.
Well, Amazon only has one. Asus ROG Rampage 4 Black Edition is $500. Crazy.
Sweet.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's big time expensive, but it is sweet. I don't like Wi-Fi. I don't use Wi-Fi. I recommend always hardwiring my connections. And so, yeah, so I look for boards that do not have Wi-Fi, because if you get a board that has Wi-Fi on it, you're going to have to pay for the Wi-Fi, and you're going to be paying for something that you do not use, right?
Yeah, I agree.
You don't want to pay for things that you don't use. So I never use Wi-Fi, so I always buy boards that are not Wi-Fi boards. The motherboard that I have in my computer is it's the Asus H97i Mini ITX, and it is the H version, which is not a gamer version, right? But every game that I play on max settings at, you know, without any frame rate issues whatsoever, all right? But it's not I'm making air quotes with my fingers, it's not a gamer board, right? And so what gamer board means, you know, is usually upgraded sound and Wi-Fi and things that I don't really use, you know? So, in other words, you don't have to have a gamer board to build a sweet gaming machine. So, where was I going with that thought?
Micro's smaller than mini, because I noticed the motherboard you recommend is a micro, and it goes in a mini case.
Yeah, micro is one step larger than mini. Mini is there's the very very smallest is called an Atom board, and it's only made by Intel, and they have PCs now, fully functional PCs that you can game on that fit in the palm of your hand, and they use what is called an Intel Atom board, right? And it's extremely tiny motherboard, but when we're talking about in the realm of desktops in 2015, the smallest is a mini ITX, and the next up is a micro. Right, and the next up, if I'm not mistaken, is an ATX.
So I got the wrong one in my shopping list here. Asus Mini motherboard.
You want what you want, and what I'm recommending is a Mini ITX. Mini is the smallest.
Well, that's double the price. I noticed. Looks like of a micro, or maybe not. No, never mind. I found an Asus Mini ITX DDR3 1600 motherboard. Does that sound right?
Yep.
so many different on Amazon. It's only $50. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Link it. Link it to me.
This mini ITX EDR.
Yeah.
900 motherboard AM1. Okay, I'll link it to you.
Link it. That sounds too cheap.
Okay, I'll share it with you. I'm trying to get the right system here. I'll be your guinea pig if I go for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not saying
take a look at
cheap system. Yeah, I'm not saying that cheap systems can't be good either. I mean, cheap systems can be very good. That is an AMD build. All right, looking. This is an Asus Mini ITX AM1i. Looking. Yeah, this is an AMD build. Okay, is that what you're?
Oh, okay.
Is that what you want? You want an AMD chip, or do you want an Intel chip?
Well, you say I want an Intel, I think.
I got to tell you that you see the price of this board. You see how inexpensive this board is, and you see how it's rated. It's rated with 5 stars. In other words, what this guy is telling you is that this board is pretty damn sweet, and it's like cost pennies, right? It's it's on sale for like $55. So, dude, all you've got to do is put it, buy an AMD chip on this thing, and you'll have a brand new, super sweet, mini ITX build for under $100. Sounds like a deal.
Can you give me a recommendation of an AMD chip then?
I can't. Yeah, and the reason I can't is because I haven't been researching them. But, Match. See where it says show more? All right, go to show more and look for the interface and connections and make sure that you match. Okay, what I want you to do is research this board and product description. Right. Powerful, innovative motherboard supports.
I can't even find the socket.
Yeah, I know. I'm all the way at the bottom of the page, Gio. It says AMD Athlon and Sempron. Radeon HD graphics. Sweet. Yeah, it looks like they just get an Athlon. Just get an AMD Athlon chip, and you're good to go.
DDR6200.
Yeah, DDR3 1600 memory. Get some Ripjaw RAM. I always go to Newegg. It's easier for me to filter in Newegg. Who's the company that makes Ripjaw? I can't remember.
Ripjaw, I've never heard of it.
Ripjaw RAM. It's the kind that I'm using in my rig now, but I just can't remember who makes it. It's Newegg. Okay, Newegg.com. Computer hardware, memory, desktop memory, G-Skill. G-Skill makes Ripjaw, and it's pretty sweet. I'm going to, let's see, G-Skill. Okay, what I'm doing is on the left-hand side of Newegg, this is why I like Newegg, because it allows you to filter very quickly. But I'm filtering for G-Skill. I'm filtering for...
I just linked you a decent Athlon, I think.
Okay.
Oh, that's nice. 3.4 gigahertz processor.
Quad-core.
Sweet.
Yeah, that's nice.
You see on this page that Gio just linked where it says Socket FM2? Do you see that, Ab? Let me know when you see that.
I'm looking.
It says Socket FM2.
Okay.
Okay, you have to make sure that your motherboard is a Socket FM2.
Okay.
Okay. All right, I'm filtering for 8 gigabytes, 2 4 gigabyte sticks. And
16.
You want 16?
Sure.
Hold on.
And that would have to be 8, like I just said, dual channel chip of 8 gigs, right?
Yeah. 16 gigs, 2 times 8 gigabytes.
I'm not sure if that motherboard supports that.
See, this is where you get me with AMD. I did all my research on an Intel because I knew I was going to build an Intel. And so when you get me into, you get me into unknown waters when you start talking about AMD. But it should be okay as long as you match, as long as you match the numbers correctly. All right. What I'm going to do is I'm going to link a product called G-Skill Ripjaw RAM. And this is 16 gigabytes, 2 times 8 gigabytes, so two 8 gigabyte sticks. This is DDR1600 and PC3 1280 RAM speed. So hold it, copy, paste. There we go. That is, I'm using the 4 gigabyte version of that. Did we, Abby, still there? There we go.
No.
Yep. But if you click on, if you look at the, it's 4 out of 5 eggs, right? So if you click on the reviews, you can filter down for the people that did not like this RAM and find out what they said, right? So, the pros, this one guy said, it looks pretty, but the cons, I installed the RAM into a brand new computer I built and almost immediately began experiencing crashes to the desktop. I thought it was because of the OS. I was using Linux Mint 17.2 at first, but decided to run Memtest first to rule out RAM problems. Both sticks combined had 40,000 errors. one had the vast majority of errors, while the other had only around 10. So this guy got bad RAM, but it happens. So, but all right. So okay. So let's see. Gio, I was gonna end the podcast because we've got to end it at some time.
Yeah.
And we've been going on for hours with this. I was gonna end the podcast with a finishing up a talk on the PC case and then talking about the power supply. And then tomorrow we can come back if you're up for it and talk about the operating system.
I should be around tomorrow. Sounds okay. Good.
Yeah, I should be around tomorrow too. Okay, just to kill this topic of PC case, again, we're talking to our hypothetical PC builder newbie, and we are recommending to him a mini ITX motherboard build, right? So remember, you have to match the mini ITX motherboard to the case. So when you go to Newegg, you have to filter for a mini ITX case, right? And you can look at their editor's choice. I have a couple recommendations. The one that I have is the what is the name of this case? I modded my case, so it's Bitphoenix, not the Prodigy, the one before the Prodigy. Gio, what was the name of that one?
I don't remember the case's names.
Yeah, I've modded my case. I've painted my case with aftermarket paint, and so the name of it isn't attached to it anymore. But I use a Bitphoenix case, and my case only costs $90. Now, why did I mod the case? Right, when I got the case, it's a good case. Right, Bitphoenix makes good stuff, but it's only $90. Right. So there's going to be compromises when something costs only $90. Right. And the compromise is the paint job. Right. The paint job was garbage. When I got the Bitphoenix Prodigy and I got the red one, some of the paint was worn off on the edges. Right. It was already worn off. And the reason it was worn off is because it's a cheap paint job.
Isn't it like a rubber? I'm looking at it now. I've seen it once, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. The they call it soft touch. The feet on the top and the feet on the bottom are made from that soft touch plastic that you're talking about, but the side panels are made from aluminum and they're just painted over. So what I did was I took it to my friend's auto body shop and we modded it. We painted over it. You know, I like the Asus colors, red and black, so I painted it with automotive paint. Which automotive paint is impenetrable. The best paint in the world is automotive paint for obvious reasons. Automotive paint is bulletproof. And so I sanded it down and we painted the side panels black and red using automotive paint, and it's beautiful. It's much far superior to the paint job that it came with. The actual case that I've got is really good, but the paint was really kind of mediocre. So I just repainted it. When I bought this case, just after I bought it, I had one of those Homer Simpson moments, where probably the case that I really, really wanted came out, right? And the case that I really wanted is new for 2015, and I recommended it to Ab. I linked it to him, and it's called the Corsair. It's brand new. It's a Corsair, and it's called the Carbon Series, right? And it's beautiful, right? And it looks like a little lunchbox, it's got a handle on it, and you can pick it up. It's a gamer. It's a gamer case. You can actually pick it up and walk it around. And I've seen these things in person, and they're just beautiful. They're made from carbon fiber, and so they're completely indestructible. On top of the fact that they're beautiful, all right. If I had the money, or if I needed another case, I've got the money. I don't need money. I've got the money. If I needed another case, that is the case that I would buy. It is brand new, editor's choice for 2015, Corsair Carbon Series, and that's the one I recommended to Ab. I don't know. It's mini ITX. It also comes in an ATX form. So. What do you think, Gio? Any recommendations for mini ITX cases?
No, but I like the handles. I'm looking at the Asus boxes now, but I don't see. I don't know. I'm seeing a really small one called the Graphite Series, and then
Graphite Series. Did I call it Carbon Series? And it's actually the Graphite Series. I may have. It's still early in the morning.
No, it might be the Carbon Series because that's how I got here. But I don't. Yeah, to clarify that.
Yeah.
Because the Graphite Series seems like they're the smallest.
I think it might be Graphite, actually. Now that you're saying that, it rings a bell. We type in Corsair computer cases. Yeah, it's Graphite Series. You were right. I said Carbon Series. Let me read. I don't want this podcast to go too long. It's already gone over time. And I don't want people tuning out just because it's getting long-winded. But I want to make sure that I'm steering people to the right thing.
And for, like, power supplies, I mean, most likely, like, 500-watt, 600-watt.
Yeah. Corsair Graphite Series, you are correct. And it is sweet. Oh, I love that PC case. Oh, God, I was kicking myself that I missed it by like 2 months. It came out 2 months after I bought my BitPhoenix rig.
Technology keeps on moving.
Yeah, pissed me off. Oh, every time I look at that thing, I'm like, oh God, I want that PC case. But Gio, let's finish up with a quick talk about power supplies. Okay. Now, if you go to the Newegg site. There is a power supply calculator, right? And what you do is you put into that PC power power supply calculator all the parts that you want, and then it will tell you how much power you need. Okay. Now, with my rig, I only need about 250 watts. That's all I need. I could get away with a laptop power supply. That's how low consumption my PC is, right? I bought a Corsair, I think it's the CX500, right? Non-modular, okay? And the reason it's non-modular is because the modular power supplies are more expensive, and they're ever so slightly bigger, and the bigger ones did not fit into my case. So I bought the CX500. And I think I got it for like $80. Something that you want to know about power supplies, a couple things. First of all, I'm recommending a Haswell build. You have to have a Haswell-ready power supply. All right. Now, what I want you to do is, just talking to my hypothetical PC builder newbie, all right, I want you to go to YouTube and type in Haswell ready power supplies. And what's going to come up is Linus Tech Talk, right? And Linus is going to give you a whole wrap on why you need to have a Haswell ready power supply. Okay. The Haswell chip, when you're not using it, scales all the way down, right? And in power consumption. Okay. Because the Haswell is built to optimize a laptop. All right. So when you're not using your PC, it scales all the way down to a very minimum wattage usage level. But it only does that if the power supply cooperates, right? If the power supply is not Haswell ready, it will not scale down when your fingers are not on a keyboard, right? So to maximize usage out of your new Haswell chip and your new Haswell motherboard, you need a Haswell ready power supply. Okay, so Corsair is Haswell ready, right? It's also a popular brand, and it's also very reliable, and it's also inexpensive. That's why I went with Corsair. All right. Now, I want to talk quickly before we end this about bronze, silver, and platinum ratings. All right, bullshit. All right, all right, guys, be careful of being sold. All right. When you're talking about those ratings on those power supplies, right? You're talking about optimum levels of where the power supply does not deviate or does not flux in currency over a period of time, and it will regulate even power surges coming into your box. Okay, for a regular PC, you don't need that kind of reliability, right? The CX500, I've got a CX500. I'm almost certain of it actually, but it's what they call a bronze rating, right? A regular computer person does not need a silver or a platinum or a gold, okay? You do not need that level of reliability, right? Those power supplies are extremely expensive, and what they're made for is server farms, all right? If you own a server farm, right, then get a platinum power supply, right? If you do not own a server farm, go with a cheap power supply, okay? So that bronze, silver, and platinum rating is very scammy. Make sure that you get a power supply that is Haswell ready, and that is just regular bronze rated, and you're good to go. So that is my rant.
While we built this computer in theory.
Yeah, so all inside my head. Amazing. Gio, before I go completely hoarse, let's nail the podcast right there. And we'll pick it up again tomorrow. And what we will talk about is operating systems and what operating system you want to use for your particular applications, and what the upside and downside to using different operating systems is.
All right. We'll see you tomorrow.
Dude. All right, dude. Talk
Thank you, Alan.
Yeah. Have a good one. You're welcome, dude. You too, Gio.
Take care.
Hi, everybody. This is Farce Value, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio at fakeologist.com.